Boom.
She's not like anyone else. You wonder why she captured you like a firefly. Shine like you never could alone. And tell me.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian Wimpen, William Tincup, and Nisha coming to you to talk about HR and how wonderful it is. So, and I think our guest is going to take it up a notch today. So will be a good time. Also, I want to mention that my folks over at PeopleClues, big supporter of the show. We appreciate that. And William, how'd you handle the blizzard? We had this like severe storm, the blizzard. How'd you deal with that?
We didn't get the blizzard down here in Texas, Brian. Amarillo got the blizzard, but down in Dallas and Fort Worth, we were blizzardless. Although, if I needed a blizzard, I could always go to Dairy Queen, get me a blizzard. Did not go to Dairy Queen, nor did a blizzard happen here. But it's beautiful, man. It's a fantastic day today.
Good shout-out to the DQ. I like it.
Yeah.
That's my kind of blizzard, by the way. yeah, Tulsa, same thing, man. It was there were some funny pictures. They had, like, blades of grass that had, like, a little bit of snow on it. And that was, like, we'll never forget the 2013 blizzard, right? It was actually pretty epic humor, I got to admit. So, but there's actually no milk, eggs, and bread on the shelves anymore. So the sales pumped up. End of the month, sales coffers around taxes were out of sight, cleared the stores out, right? And then now people got a lot of full refrigerators in Tulsa. No blizzard. It's nice. It's 65 degrees today. So, hey. Let's get to our guest. I think it is going to be just amazing. So, Patty Cynical, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you. And while we're talking blizzard, I would tell you in Boston we got about 28 inches of snow, so I don't want to hear anything about Amarillo with a dusting. Because we still have piles and piles and a rainstorm today that's adding more moisture to the air, to the ground, and I'm just so glad this isn't snow today.
You know, that's when you start getting like over 2 feet of anything, you know, it's real, right? So
unless it's buckets of cash falling from the sky, it's too much.
Ah, I like you already. So, if you would go ahead and first time on the show, go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll kind of roll into jump into your world and figure out what's top of mind with you.
Sure. So. I run a HR consulting firm by the name of First Beacon Group, and we provide HR, typically outsourced HR solutions to small and mid-sized businesses. And if you're familiar with the Boston area, the New England market, what we do is we really work with some of those small to mid-sized venture-backed, but not always, startups, family-owned businesses, really the heart and the soul of the U.S. economy. So really within the Boston area, lots of medical device companies, higher ed, biotech, technology, e-commerce, and provide what we call just-in-time HR support and service to those companies. A little bit about my background is, you know, about 25, 30 years of HR experience, and I always say no to client are alike for us. I mean, one client we might be working on compensation challenges, and the next client we might be helping them solve healthcare and cost containment and how to still offer competitive benefits to attract and retain a very smart, intelligent workforce, but also try to retain and rein in costs a little bit. So that's a little bit about, you know, what I do. I also do a little bit of work for the Boston Globe. I do some live chats, and I'm one of the job docs. There's about four or five of us that rotate that write a column for the Globe and do some blogging and chatting for the Globe. So that keeps me in touch with the current issues and what job seekers are thinking, what employees are thinking, what small business owners are thinking about, what are the current hot issues within HR.
Nice. Patty, this is William. What is with your clients, what do you think is keeping them up at night? What's trending with your clients and what you see in the marketplace?
I think there's a real focus on cost containment and still being competitive and attractive to employees, especially technology employees that are very much in demand, skill sets that, you know, there's probably 10 places in Boston that would hire them within a moment. But healthcare reform is concerning to a lot of our clients. I mean, we've had it in Massachusetts for a couple of years right now, but it's expensive. And so looking at different plans, looking at different models to figure out how you can offer competitive benefits but not see a 30% rate increase every year, or you know, what my clients are concerned about is they'll get a huge rate increase, and how do they pass that on equitable fashion if there's some type of cost sharing arrangement between the employee and the company, which usually there are, you know, there is some type of cost sharing arrangement, and also being competitive with pay, because as we all know, there was a, you know, recession not too long ago, and so a lot of my clients weren't as generous and weren't as aggressive in terms of compensation increases or bonus or equity. And now, they, you know, some of them won't admit this, but, you know, making up a little bit of time. And looking back at 2008, 2010, sort of that 2 or 3 year time period, and saying, gosh, you know, who could we lose, and if you've lost one engineer, how do we get back on track without, again, breaking that budget?
I think that would be
the top of mind.
When one of your clients says that, you know, they think they have a retention problem, or they'd like to really focus on retaining top talent, what's the relationship for you between their need and desire to retain top talent and their comp strategy, their benefit strategy, and the work environment strategy?
You know, you mentioned probably the three biggest pieces of the puzzle: what you pay people, what you offer people through benefits, and then the workplace, the culture, the environment. And that's really, you know, those three pillars are really the part of the secret recipe that I think a lot of our clients are trying to figure out. If they pull back a little bit on compensation, can they offer maybe a benefit that doesn't cost them as much? So it might not be a great tuition aid program, but it might be, hey, let's allow you to work at home one day a week, or let's give you some flexible work hours, or you know, let's let you come in, you know, 10 to 6 or 10 to 7 or something like that, so you don't have to sit in traffic for an hour and a half on these snowy mornings. So I think figuring out the magic of those three and what works, both from a company perspective and acceptability perspective, but also a financial perspective, because as we all know, some of these benefits aren't cheap. So for a small business, it's an enormous challenge. When you're competing with some of the big boys in technologies, it's hard to sort of keep on your game and keep in the game. So I think compensation is probably the number one driver, and then I would put benefits and workplace as a close two and three.
Nice. What's are you familiar with Melissa Meyer Yahoo teleworking policy thing?
You know, I was at lunch yesterday, and it was in the front page of the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and a client brought it up, and as we know, Melissa Meyer is a new CEO of Yahoo, and she was hired, I think she was, you know, a couple months pregnant, which, you know, raised some eyebrows that Yahoo would steal her, I think, from Google, and when she was so close to her due date, and I think what she announced yesterday, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think she announced that the work-at-home telecommuting arrangements were going to cease and desist.
That was the gist of the policy. I wanted to get your take on that.
You know, I think it's going to be a challenge, because once you start taking away benefits that employees have enjoyed, I think it's going to be an enormous challenge. And I know that, you know, the genesis of the idea and the thought behind it was that with folks telecommuting, you do lose some of that innovative back and forth sharing of ideas when you see someone in an elevator or you ride down an escalator with someone. I think there is value to that, but it's tougher when you have to take it away. And I, you know, I'm interested to see how this plays out. I'm wondering if there's going to be a backlash because I think people also have built their lives around it. You know, they've built their child care around it. They've built their schedules around it. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, I'm not sure if I would totally agree with that. I think, you know, more of a modified, hey, you have to be in the office X number of days per week, you know, whether it's Monday through Wednesday or Monday through Thursday, and we all have, you know, one day that we can work at home, is probably, you know, where I would have landed on this. But I think the strategy of, you know, you can't work at home, no more remote work relationships. I mean, I'm sure there are folks that assumed that those remote work relationships were really for the foreseeable future and may have even jumped from a competitor to go to Yahoo with the premise that, you know, that would be a commitment that was, you know, a longer-term commitment.
Hey, William, let me jump in here. And thank you for asking me what I think about this, William, by the way. So,
Brian, value your opinion, so tell us what you
think.
Oh,
thank you. I got a fairly fragile, sensitive ego. So, you know, all you can do on that to shore that up is greatly appreciated. So here's my take. Being in kind of being in the big corporate environments, my stint way back when and stuff, I had an immediate feeling because this is just one of those that just doesn't – the smell test isn't working here.
Right.
Literally, when you take a culture and you convince a board that, hey, we need to completely go the other way, right, around where the workforce is going, where, you know, everything culturally as far as collaborative, results-oriented work, you know, all of that – I literally think that the CEO, you know, brilliant strategy. I'm actually want to write some on this. I think she was able to convince them she's going to turn the culture upside down. You're talking about like a guaranteed 3 years to see how much damage this policy does for that company. I think it's totally a diversionary tactic. My cynical side, I literally think this is so far out on in left and or right field that it's like, okay, I'm going to double down and I'm going to do something so radical that there's no downside for me, speaking first person for the CEO, is if it just blows up, it's going to take a long time to unravel, right? Or for some reason, if this gives me short-term gains in productivity or stock price, then I'm, you know, that's going to help me and my political capital with the board. So there's no downside. So it's like, you know, all bets are off. I think it was very strategic in, you know, some protectionism. So just my take.
Do you think had she come out with sort of a modified, hey, we really want you, we want to see your face, we believe in this, the theory of, so much occurs when two people are in the same room, in the same building, in the same office, the synergy that occurs that doesn't happen when folks are working remotely. Had she come out with, you know, at least 20% of, you know, you can take 20% of your schedule and work remotely, you know, which is the equivalent of about one work day a week. Do you think if she had come out with something modified, there would be less of a visceral reaction from the world?
I don't think anybody would have even noticed. I think it would be a non-event to shift a little bit about how you approach that. You know, especially internally, they communicate kind of here's what we're going for and here's the reason that I truly believe that we're missing out on spending time with each other. But I'm not devaluing the fact that having more flexibility and not having to make the drive and, you know, just having a full day of flexibility on remote work, you know, remote work schedules, showcasing, I see the value in that. I totally do. But I need people to be together because we need the spark. You know what I mean? You need that across the table. You need to be able to laugh together and argue together and all that stuff. That would have been, I think that would have been a non-issue. That happens every day.
Right.
So that's what I mean. I just, it doesn't, the litmus test is just like, it just kicked to my radar and like, huh, this is completely, it's like rolling time back. And, you know, everybody needs to show up at their station to assemble the widgets and clock in. And it's like, wow, you're going to take thought leaders and knowledge workers and people that are supposed to be creative and you're going to shove them into a box? That's going to be really interesting.
It seemed very, you know, what I would call an operational decision, you know, rather than very operational and tactical versus strategic. And you wonder, you know, coming full circle back to retention and culture and workplace and giving people flexibility in lieu of 100%, you know, paid benefits or something like that, you wonder what the near-term and long-term backlash is going to be from employees. You wonder if they're going to see a blip in turnover. You wonder if people are just going to, you know, I think we've all seen this in our careers, these passive-aggressive folks who get so ticked off at something like this that they say, fine, you want me to be here 9 to 5? I'll be here 9 to 5. I'll be here 5 days a week. And if you call me at 6:10 on a Thursday night or I receive an email at 6:10 on a Thursday night, I'll answer it at 9:01 on a Friday morning. So it'll be interesting if they see some of that rebellion and that type of backlash because it's really, you know, she's looking – what I think some perceive as face time. You know, we want you here early, we want you here late, we want you, you know, here, you know, almost, and I'm not saying she said this, but almost as sort of 7x24, we want you present.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's that whole Google thing, right? She wants FaceTime. Get everybody an iPhone. FaceTime's on the iPhone. So, I don't know if, and I'm going to do one more point, and I'm going to do a quick reset, is, you know, I'm not sure if she's looked at kind of some of the employment numbers out there. That's a pretty competitive market for a lot of the development, and you all, like a lot of the people that Yahoo employs are begging to go somewhere else, right? And it's like, okay, we just need one reason to go, and it's like, oh, this is a good one. Okay, I'll take all those offers. I'm sure the recruiting world is on fire.
Right.
With the database on Yahoo, I'm sure that the sourcers, the recruiters, all of a sudden are like, the offer still stands. You ready? And it's like, yep, I'm done. I'm ready.
Right.
I'm good. I paid my.
And I wonder if for some folks this was, you know, that straw that broke the camel's back. That
has to be.
Yeah, that there were, you know, other concerns, other issues that they were willing to turn the other cheek and say, okay, you know, it's an organization that's going through some transition with new leadership, but, you know, this could tip a lot of people to say, you know, I've had it, like, this is it, you know, now I'm listening to those recruiters' phone calls.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Well, hey, everybody, let me do a quick reset. You're listening to Drive Through HR. We're on with Patty Senecal.
Yeah.
So,
hey,
go ahead, Wayne.
No, I got a quick question, Patty. How is it best to communicate benefits? Like, you know, as we're talking about this, one of the things that keeps popping into my head is most employees don't know all the benefits that you provide as a company. Now, you know, all of the perks, if you will.
Right.
And so, like that benefit statement. You know, a lot of people that with Yahoo's example, they might not have thought of telework or virtual work as a benefit.
Absolutely.
They might have just thought of it as, this is just the job, you know, I do the job from the place.
Until they have to go there 5 days a week, then they'll realize that there was a benefit, right?
Right. So how do you, I know you coach your clients around this stuff. What's some of the best ways to communicate both the tangible and intangible benefits of the gig?
Well, a couple of things that we work with clients on is we have what we call a three-pronged communication strategy around benefits. We recommend that clients message the same information three times but in three different ways because some folks still like to get the information sent to their home so their spouse or their partner can open it up because they're supposed to, their partner never gets the information that was sent, you know, shared at the employee meeting. Some companies still do employee meetings. Some companies, you know, send push emails. Some of our clients will do webinars. And it's really communicating that same information three different times and three different, you know, vehicles, really. Because what a 22-year-old listens to or reads is not the same as a 52-year-old necessarily. So using a couple of different ways of communicating that information. And one of the things that we recommend that our clients do, at least on a every few year basis, I mean, the leaders in this do it every year, and it is an investment, and it does require some effort, but oftentimes a benefits broker will do this for you, which is great because they have to pick up the task and the labor and the resource requirements associated with it, is sending out benefit statements. You know, here's your base salary. You think your base salary is one piece, you know, that's sort of one piece of the package. But the other pieces are, here's what we pay for family and medical, and here's what we pay for family dental, and, you know, here's our tuition aid program, and here's what we, I mean, even some of the really tactical stuff like workers' comp and FICA and all that stuff. I mean, here's sort of the cost of employing you. And then some of the softer things as well, which I think gets back to the you know, the Yahoo discussion about, you know, working from home. What does that save you in commuting costs? And frankly, aggravation, because if you're racing home to pick a kid up from, you know, daycare at 6 o'clock on a Friday night, and they say to you, you need to be there at 6 versus 6:01, and you're in downtown Boston, and you're living in a suburb, it's you know, going 90 miles an hour and ticking off a few people on the way to get to that 6 o'clock pickup. So
yeah.
Some of that mental stress, I think, too. And you know, everything from an employee assistance program to, you know, lunch. I have a few clients that do, you know, employee lunches once a month or twice a month or, you know, a couple of times a year. But when you have, you know, 500 employees that you're buying lunch for, it's not just, you know, $5. So it adds up. And I think most of our clients that do a really good job with employee communications are communicating this, you know, benefits changes, open enrollment, both enhancements, and also, you know, quite frankly, sometimes some of the benefits enhancements on an annual basis come with, we added this, but we had to give up this. And communicating that three different ways, but also I think that the star employers out there do an amazing job of really summarizing it in a statement, and to see one sheet, 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, whether it's emailed to you, whether it's sent to your home, whether you log in and you know, with a username and password and get it on your employee portal, it's mind-boggling to see what some companies, for the burden of benefits costs to employees. And, you know, sometimes there's a variable pay piece in there, sometimes there's a cell phone piece, sometimes there's, you know, conferences and things like that. But I think that employees, you know, that there are those hidden expenses. So I think the best clients of ours do, you know, aggressively communicate that on an annual basis with
nice
benefit statements. Yeah.
Well, I know you get asked by your clients, you know, when what to outsource, you know, in HR, and when to outsource it. So, like, when do I make the decision to outsource payroll? To whom do I outsource payroll? Time and attendance, applicant tracking, you know, like all the different software, the staffing layers, you know, all the services layers. And I know that you kind of help people navigate this, these types of waters. What's some of your takes on when you should decide to outsource certain components of HR as opposed to keeping them core, and then how do you make the decision on where to outsource those things?
Well, I think there are a couple of magic numbers that really are guidelines for an employer to look at. And again, it's not a, you know, it's not a one size fit all. I was with a prospect yesterday at lunch, and they asked me the same thing. They're 32-person company. And they said, you know, when do we hire an HR person? When do we outsource it? When do we get our own? And sort of the magic numbers are, if you have about 50 employees, you should think about hiring a part-time HR resource. Once you get into the 75, 80-plus range, definitely over 100, it does become too complex. Things are falling through the cracks. Someone has a baby. That baby is not added to benefits, or someone, you know, their pay increase didn't go through, and you just keep having these headaches pop up because no one really owns it. And, you know, with a lot of my clients, they're, you know, the small to mid-sized growing companies, they don't really want to focus on HR. They want to focus on their core business. And I think some of it's driven by industry and the complexity of the business. If you have under one business, five different business models, that's an additional layer of complexity versus if you're all working towards the same goal and there's some synergy in what you're doing and it's one unified product or one unified service, and, you know, that's a little bit simpler. And I think in terms of, you know, who do you outsource to is really, it gets back to the question of what do you want to outsource. You know, we have some clients that outsource recruiting to us. We have some clients that outsource training to us because they don't want to hire, you know, a trainer, and they don't have anyone with that internal competence. We have some other clients that outsource HR admin to us. But I always look back and say, you know, what can you get for free? Because I'm sort of a frugal cynic. And so I always, you know, push the buttons with, you know, why isn't your benefits broker helping with that? And why, you know, COBRA administration, that's the worst, that's the biggest headache on the planet in terms of HR. Why
True
isn't
that.
Why isn't your broker handling that? You know, because your broker's making money on you every year. They should sort of be throwing something in for you as a carrot. So, you know, the recruiting is often, you know, an easy piece to outsource. The benefits is often an easy piece to outsource. We have a lot of larger clients where we do just their affirmative action programs because that's the worst job in the world, creating an affirmative action program. So we have a lot of clients that have tried to do it internally, and quite honestly, after they've been through one cycle, they usually don't do a good job, and they're dying to throw it over the fence to someone who will do a good job. So I think some of it depends on company size, but also the complexity. If they're in several different businesses or if they just have one product or service, and also obviously what their internal competence is. I mean, we have a few clients that have you know, sort of, you know, a finance person that may have shown an interest in HR, and so that individual has picked up some of the HR tasks, and we sort of fill in around that person, but it's really seen as a developmental step for them to take on more responsibilities and makes their job a little bit more interesting as well.
Well, that is good stuff. We've definitely defined and agree wholeheartedly on a couple of your points of areas that absolutely suck and are tedious and monotonous within the tactical world of human resources. So we've got about a minute and 30 seconds left. So if tell folks where they can actually find you, connect up with you in the interwebs.
Sure. So I think all of us are pretty active on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, and I never say no to an invite, so I would encourage everyone to connect on LinkedIn. My Twitter handle is psinacole, and it's psinacole. I also, if you go to boston.com, which is the URL for the Boston Globe, you can find me there roughly two times a month. It's usually every other Monday, although that's not a perfect schedule, where I do a live chat from 12 to 1, and I also do a blog posting every Monday for them, and then I hit the Sunday print edition probably two or three times a month as well.
Well,
so those are the best ways to get
excellent.
Me.
Fantastic. It was good having you on the show. Good chat, because you did most of the talking. That's like the best show ever, we might add, because you know, again, they hear us all the time, and that just, I mean, it gets, as much as I think it's a great idea, most of our listeners are like, oh, my God, stop talking.
It was a pleasure. I can't believe our 30 minutes is up.
We told you. It goes quick. The brilliance happens. So, folks, we're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow.
I got a wrist, she's a deleter. Wiped off the face of the earth and gone. Shot into space, cause she's a deleter. I'm a repeater, she's a deleter. Now I'm gone.